What does autonomy mean to you? And how do you think it will reshape the relationship between humans and machines in the future?
Oh, wow. We're starting hard, like full on. Well, what does it mean for me? I think like without autonomy, like there is no me, right? Like, so I think it's totally for everyone connected with like existence and personhood and things like that. And personally, for me, it also connected to exploring what it means in a software sense, I guess, by building autonomous AI agents, which are sort of these software entities which you kind of delegate some autonomy to, or maybe one day they kind of evolve to have it sort of independently of any delegation. I think like we obviously always need to be a bit careful because in technology, people like to project far into the future about things and make it sound like it's already here. Which is also great because this optimism kind of gets us to build cool things. But like there's this sort of, I guess, worry and like concern from people building sort of very advanced artificial intelligence that these sort of models will get better and better and better and then become sort of agentic and then have sort of a mind of their own and sort of start existing independent of any sort of human guidance or control. And then there's these kind of worries about them, you know, maybe taking over. So that's one concern, right? Where like humans lose autonomy because machines take it from them. And then we have like the Matrix and other kind of sci-fi stories that kind of paint that picture. The other one is, I think, equally concerning, not as often talked about because it kind of goes against the narrative for a lot of people building exactly this technology, which is that we kind of go back to some form of feudalism. So we might not, you know, go quite as far where like you have these sort of super intelligences that sort of rule the humans. You might just have like humans who have access to very, very good intelligence that is so powerful and everyone wants it. And therefore society like moves even more to like feudalistic structures and less to sort of competitive like open market economies, right? And in that world, we can also lose a lot of autonomy because like, you know, you see this. I mean, in history, we had these periods where the majority of people had very little autonomy, and there was a lot of power resting with very few. And I think that risk definitely is there as well. Because if let's say these advances sort of plateau a bit more on a technical level, then whoever controls them can maybe be quite powerful over a lot of humans.
Yeah, I feel like you guys saw the future way earlier. I know you're an OG in the space. I still remembered back in 1819, you know, you had Fetch AI. So what was the vision of Fetch and, how did you actually get into crypto AI space in the first place?
Yeah, so great questions. Actually, let me first answer how I got into crypto AI, because that then leads to the second part. I had come across Bitcoin when I was doing like my PhD in economics, found it super interesting. Someone gave me actually, I found the technology interesting, the concepts, economics behind it, computer science behind it. Someone gave me a paper wallet with Bitcoins and I threw it away because I didn't believe in the sort of value thesis. And then I kind of forgot about it, went my other ways. And then one day, fast forward, I was at this entrepreneur thing, Entrepreneur First, a bit like YC for Europe, great program. And there were all these people building like crypto stuff. That was like late 2017. And like that was kind of coinciding with like one big run up in the Bitcoin price. And naturally there was all this buzz, but they were like genuine, like really good builders there. And I was like, well, that's very interesting. Like I obviously had sort of studied a bit before, and now there was like also Ethereum, there was a couple of other technologies. But I was still building my other startup. And then a year later, everything had crumbled with my own startup. It had failed. And I was like, okay, well, what do I want to do? And that's where late 2018, I sort of decided to really focus on like three areas, like my background in game theory, what I had done between my PhD in game theory and then, which was sort of focused mostly on data science and machine learning algorithms. And then I was very curious on crypto. And so I was like, where can I find like a combination of those three things? And back then, AI crypto intersection wasn't a thing. Like now everyone talks about it, but back then it was basically just Fetch AI who was kind of doing that in some way. It was maybe a couple others who were sort of doing it, but not really saying it in that way. And Fetch, I joined them in 2019. They had this idea in the white paper of agents. They also had a lot of other ideas, which other teams were building, but this agent idea I found very interesting. And then I built up a team at Fetch to kind of realize an agent framework. And back then we didn't have large language models. So it was much more rules-based and like kind of dedicated AI and ML models to kind of solve specific problems. So what we could do was much more limited, but it was a very interesting starting point.
That's incredible. And then from there, we've been through a couple cycles now in the crypto sphere. And then here you go, it's Valerie. So how did you start that? And what was the initial vision and now?
Yeah. So when I worked at Fetch, that was sort of 2+ years, I was building this agent framework. We had a lot of fun with that. As I said, it was also quite limited. Also, I realized at that time that like one thing which was holding us back as an organization was that there was this chain which some part of the organization had to build, and then there were the agents, which I was interested in. And I always felt that from a go-to-market point of view and just generally like growing the agent side, the chain like held us back, because every chain ecosystem sort of immediately makes you a bit focused on yourself. Like you now have to sell this block space, and then you have to, you know, sell the applications that are being built on top. And so I was like very curious to explore agents without a chain. Like basically I was always keen to have a chain around where the agents can sort of be deployed upon and interact with. And we can dive into why that's useful more generally. But I wanted to do it in a more generic sense. And that's where sort of my co-founders aligned with me. And so in summer 2021, co-founded Valerie. And the idea was to basically build agents for all chains. Like basically take agents as these kind of power users of chains that can sort of either users in their own right or complement like human users in using blockchains, but also beyond. And so we built this agent framework, and our initial like go-to-market was actually very misled in the end. Like we learned a lot there. We initially focused on DAOs, and we thought that it would be good to help DAOs make their processes more autonomous. And which is in theory true, like DAOs could be more autonomous. Like a lot of them are basically a bunch of humans making decisions, right? But they're terrible customers, like loosely put, right? And so like we had like very long sales processes, often like very complicated sales processes. Then we would actually build the thing, and then the people who had bought the product had moved on, and the new parts of the DAO were like, okay, we paid for this, but we don't actually see this problem or whatever. So it was actually terrible in terms of like a business. But something lucky happened, like what you need with every startup. You're kind of doing conceptually the right thing, like agents like crypto, but the timing wasn't quite there. And then like the timing happened.
Yeah, the timing arrived. And yeah, it's pretty insane. I wanted to actually ask you, because you're in this, you know, particular space, what you think about this recent GOAT, you know, thing that's taking off like this week. Because, you know, that's also an agent, and, you know, it's, you know, everyone is talking about it. Yeah. What is your view? And do you think that, you know, this type of thing would also arise from your vision down the line as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like about time that there's like real like experimentation with agents and like people doing crazy things with them. I think there's this, you know, leading into this, like we had this very serious part about autonomy. And I think like what sometimes happens in this AI space is like, there's this one group of people who say like, oh, what are you doing here? Like could lead to this like sort of eradication of humanity, blah, blah, blah. Like do not do it. And then they're you know, they're already like to the nth degree. They're like 10 steps ahead of where we're actually at. Like we're still in a point in time where I think, and we might be stuck there for quite some time, where these technologies are interesting, but not so that they just sort of take control of everything. So I think it's really good that people do somewhat crazy things with agents and like explore a bit, push the boundary a bit. Obviously, everyone needs to decide where they put their limits. I find this particular experiment also interesting. And the way we think at Valerie and also how we build OLAS, like the way we think about agents is still slightly ahead, I think, of where the majority of the market is. So I think this, what happened with ChatGPT, which is sort of this timing piece I was referencing, right, is that people were like, okay, well, we can talk to like models, like AI systems, and then they talk back to us in a meaningful way. And that was sort of this aha moment. And then the models are basically talkers, right? And so like a lot of the apps, which people then sort of, I guess like the new arrivals in the space sort of focus on are these apps, which are sort of a version of ChatGPT. So it's like kind of ChatGPT plus a wallet or, you know, like it often has this sort of very interactive component where the user chats with the model and then like it gives it some instructions, maybe like how to send a transaction, and then they do that. And that's sort of interesting. But I think where it's much more interesting is when you have these autonomous experiences where the you use the model and then you build an agent on top so that it becomes like a doer, right? Like not just a talker, a doer. And the doer can then actually, like, whilst you do other things, like do interesting things. And that's what we're now seeing with these experiments, right? There's like doers who are actually like memeing something into existence or creating something, right? And they're like sort of artificial things. And I think that's where certainly like with OLAS and as Valerie the labs we're like focused on is building these sort of more autonomous agents which do interesting things. Where the human is sort of a consumer of some of the outputs, but isn't there all the time.
That's super interesting. What do you think 5 years from now would be some of the use cases on the OLAS? And also, what if things go wrong? You know, does, you know, is there like a fail safe on the protocol to be able to save, you know, us from being annihilation, you know?
Right. So like right now, the product, like the agents which we're building, but I think to be honest, everyone are sufficiently incapable, so like sufficiently specialized still that there's no concern for the latter. I think, you know, what we have in OLAS as one of the biggest use cases are called OLAS Predict. So what agents do there is they're like specialized in participating in prediction markets, and they have a set of rules to only do that, but they then also have these sort of open-ended learning-based large language models which they use under the hood in order to get stuff done in these prediction markets, i.e. to predict the future, to place like relevant trades, and to decide when they place them in what markets and so on. So these kind of agents which we currently have won't suddenly sort of turn around and do something very different, right? Now, as OLAS as a whole, the ecosystem, we do want to basically leverage these use cases into more powerful agent architectures. So like on a software level, what this means is that like where now it's like, you know, some percentage of rules plus some percentage of open-ended like learning-based architecture, you kind of move and more and more and more to a fully sort of dynamic architecture where it's all sort of able to dynamically learn from reinforcement learning and other approaches. But how fast that will go, I don't for sure know. So like, I think, you know, no one knows for sure, right? Like, it depends a lot on like what the model improvements look like on the architecture level, how that connects with like the data side of the equation. And so for OLAS, it's a bit like the thinking we have as well. If long-term we want to offer these very generalized agents that don't just do these very specialized things, then like we need to long-term solve like similar problems like the closed labs do, we need to work with partners like, for instance, your protocol Sentient or Prime Intellect and others to basically train new models. And we also need to have a differentiated access to like data, which others don't have access to, right? So we think a lot about like, how can we leverage these use cases, which are specialized, into larger flywheels around general purpose, like improvements around the Asian architecture.
That's incredible. Would the use cases on OLAS be initially crypto focused and later on expand to, you know, other real world use cases too?
Yeah, so that's the idea. We already have like use cases which overlap. So like Predict is very crypto focused, and still there's this like kind of window into the real world, in that the markets always reference like relevant news articles and so on. So you can go to predict.olas.network and sort of see that. We have like this sort of social media use case, which ties into like a promotion activity around OLAS, where it ties into like X, the social media platform. But we don't currently have any use cases which are purely sort of Web2 or non-crypto focused. But like, yeah, as I said, like the idea is to leverage the existing use cases into general improvements for the overall architecture, which then can be used by the developers to build arbitrary use cases. I would say that crypto is a great place to start with agents for a couple of reasons. Like one, like anything which is as data driven as like DeFi or like prediction markets, obviously allows for faster improvement loops, because you have that, you know, clear success metrics, like you know when our agent does well in a market. And then you can use that in leveraging better agents. The other thing is like through the incentives, right? So you can like define incentives for people to run very specific types of agents. And that's like a big part of OLAS. We have this like staking mechanism, which allows you to set very specific KPIs, which agents have to hit, which would be very hard to imagine to do that in a sort of non-crypto way, because it would just be a weird contraption. But in crypto, it's very native. You can basically define these KPIs on chain, and then the agents will just sort of emerge and work into them because they have an incentive to do so.
Now, since you know, the timing has come, and you know, the good days, you know, for Valery and also building OLAS, you know, have arrived, but I'm sure there's still, you know, obstacles and challenges that you had to overcome, you know, with your team. So far, what has been the most difficult thing that you, your team overcome?
I think like initially the biggest hurdle which almost killed us was like the go to market and like finding use cases which we can like bring real value to users and also bring value to our like flywheel. And I think we have like solved that to a good degree. Like now the challenges, you know, when you start, you often think like the challenges are the tech, they're never the tech. And now we're more in this thing, okay, well, how do we obviously improve like distribution? How do we like get these agents into more people's hands? But then also there are some tech challenges arising, which are sort of particularly exciting to solve with, you know, partners, because they like become infeasible for us to solve alone, be it around like, you know, how do we want to take all this data which we're generating and feed it back into like better models, which are more open, like where obviously you guys come in as well. But also things like often like trivial things, you know, everyone thinks like there's these perfect data storage solutions in crypto. And then actually once you define a couple of like requirements, you very quickly realize, oh, this thing doesn't exist yet. And so there is some, like I would say, infra and like software level challenges, which we have. And then obviously I think on the more general like agent architecture level, like it's not just for OLAS, for everyone. It's like, well, how do you go from where we are now, where everyone's building these sort of hybrid rules-based learning-based systems, to like really sort of integrated architectures? That's a general challenge for the entire research space.
Yeah, you see, you know, this Web3 AI space is very new and also extremely exciting. It's, you know, it's probably, you know, this one, you know, sector of a crypto that has the most frequent updates in terms of technology. You know, things change almost every month now with new models and new players coming in. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think, in your opinion, and you've seen all sorts of Web2 founders, Web3 founders in, you know, different verticals, and now you're in Web3 AI. Now, do you think there's any type of founder quality that is that you think is gonna be necessary for building within Web3 AI? And also, what would be like the best place to build these type of companies?
Well, I do think like what does happen in crypto is you often do get like this enormous amount of like funding for projects which don't actually have founders who can execute on the vision which they're presenting, right? So that's a common theme. I think, you know, there's a challenging combination here because you have crypto, which is a hard thing in itself. You know, there's the actual like technologies which are there, like on the cryptography level, the blockchain level and so on, which are hard. And then there's the actual like thing, the moment you have a token, you have a totally different like thing, which you have to coordinate. You have to coordinate a market and like you have to deal with all these things. There's different quality again, some on marketing side of it, which is very different to about two startups. So you have all this. And then like the AI thing, which is not just like a small thing either, right? Like it's yet another very like differentiated like set of qualities you need to bring to do well there. And so I do think it's quite a challenging overlap. But I think there's also like an interesting, obviously, opportunity, which allows to sort of leverage strengths from one side into the other and sort of kind of bounce between them to bootstrap yourself to growth. And I think founders who, you know, do that well, who do have like an ability to understand how like to navigate crypto and at the same time can build like really like foundational new kind of AI / crypto technology, do particularly well. And, you know, there are definitely several. And I think we now see like over a year into like this hype around crypto AI, I think we now see it, like that there's really quite some substance in the space when in the beginning it was very weak.
I noticed that in your company value, you mentioned mission over ego.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on this and also give us an example?
Yeah. So we have 9 company values. let's maybe not run a test. No, we use them every week in town hall. So on Fridays we have town hall and we use them there. We use them during hiring and mission over ego is one of them. And what like the idea behind it is like multifaceted. So firstly, like ultimately at a startup, it's very, very important that you are aligned with the mission because it's never possible to hire a person to do the exact job description you sent them on day one, right? So like that's a sort of top-down element of the statement. It's like, okay, there's this mission and like, you know, there's you as a person and you might have started doing X, but as you go along, you perhaps also do like some derivative of X, right? Like it slightly changes what you're doing in order for us to collectively drive forward the mission. And so it's about like, are you able to kind of live up to that to grow to bring the whole team forward together? And the other side though is also like sort of a bottom-up version of it where like, everyone in the organization can be wrong about how we get to the mission, and particular founders or like C-level executives can be wrong, right? And so everyone has the right to speak up about like, okay, this is our mission. And just because you're like more senior than me doesn't mean you're necessarily right. So I have the right to kind of, as anyone in the organization, to like voice my opinion as to how this will actually more meaningfully drive forward the mission than what you're proposing, even if you're more senior than me. So I think it has this nice kind of different aspects from which you can kind of look at working together towards a mission.
Can you explain the core functionalities of OLAF's protocol and how it enables decentralized autonomous agents to operate effectively?
Yeah, of course. So OLAS as a whole kind of breaks down into two technical parts. Like one is the stack to build agents, and then there's the protocol to coordinate what ultimately are multi-agent use cases. Historically, until now, a lot of the use cases we have live, like Predict, they leverage both parts. So most of the agents will be built on the OLAS stack and leverage the protocol. But you could, and we're working heavily towards this, also imagine a use case where someone builds an agent on a totally different architecture or framework and brings that to the protocol to participate in one of those multi-agent use cases, those agent economies. So that's the first thing. You have the stack and the protocol, and they're composable. You can use them, you can pick and choose. The second key part is like everything's open source. So a priori, you can like come as a sort of, you know, Web2 startup and say, I like the stack and I'm going to build this in-house solution with it, whatever. And you can go with Apache 2 license, you can just do that. You can also come as someone who is interested in the protocol side of it and, you know, fork the protocol or extend the protocol and just make it better. So that's, I think, key for us, that it's always open. And so the question then is like, okay, where is the value? Where is the sort of long-term, like longevity from all that? So we have like three mechanisms which coordinate effectively the network of stakeholders. We have six roles, so that's quite complex. But basically, one of the key roles are builders. So those are the ones creating agents. So in all that, we have this dev rewards mechanism, which is part of the protocol, which when you contribute valuable agents to the ecosystem in the form of code that is being used by the ecosystem, then you have the chance of like earning these dev rewards, which are sort of OLAS emissions. Another key role are those who are actually running, like launching the use cases. We call them the launchers. So that tend to, at the moment, be sort of groups of chains and protocols. So for instance, we worked with Nautilus Chain and a couple of protocols in that ecosystem to bring about that Predict use case. We're currently working with the Optimism ecosystem to bring a use case called Optimus, a DeFi agent, to the Superchain. We're working with two unannounced chain ecosystems to bring like entirely new use cases to their chain ecosystems. So these launchers do that because ultimately they see autonomous AI agents as sort of valuable users and contributors to the chain ecosystem. And so they work with us and other teams who built the agents, the builders, to bring these use cases about. And what the OLAS protocol does then is it offers like this incentive mechanism for this whole thing to bootstrap. So specifically via staking, these launchers can define these KPIs. So you can think of this like basically defining a business. Like, you set up a startup, you set up a bunch of goals, and then you hire your people that work towards these goals. Like the staking contracts and all that staking is a bit like this. You define a bunch of KPIs on chain, and then someone builds the agents, and the agents work into these goals. If they hit those goals, they get the rewards. And that allows us to kind of bootstrap these like very complex multi-agent systems because the agents are rewarded when they hit their very specific goals.
So the OLAS protocol supports the co-ownership of AI by communities. How does this work in practice and what benefit does it bring to the users or developers?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways in which you can sort of have co-ownership. So the one way is you can simply like participate in the token economy, which basically contributes in this whole flywheel. You can go to the website and learn more. The second most concrete way is actually you can run an agent. So we have like two kind of different sub personas of people running agents, so the Azure end users. So for instance, Optimus, the DeFi use case, or Predict, the prediction market use case, people will run these agents for their own personal benefit. And so in the prediction market use case, they get the yield from the agent running as well as the staking yield. In the DeFi use case, the same. And there's other kind of agents people run as sort of professional operators. Like you can imagine like being a node operator and the agent economies of OLAS. And so they run them as a sort of, business. And so in this case, you're basically literally like owning an agent outright and so sharing into this kind of AI ecosystem. And then like there's the kind of more advanced roles like building an agent where you kind of share in by the def rewards and so on.
Could you describe how the OLAS protocol handles decision-making and governance among AI agents? And how does it ensure that these agents act autonomously while still aligning with user and community interests?
Yeah. So again, I would bring it mostly back to staking and the stack. So we, in Predict, for instance, the staking contracts define criteria around what the OLAS protocol wants to see in this OLAS Predict use case. So you can imagine that like one key thing it wants to see is that there's a number of markets being live all the time. That it wants to see that these agents participate on those markets in their various capacities. So basically here, it's a similar kind of alignment like you see in a workplace. That's why I would like to take it back to this analogy. So in a workplace, you'll define like your contract, it has a job description, and then I'll have like a set of KPIs which vary maybe by quarter or whatever. Here, that's the role of the staking contract. It defines the sort of KPIs around this use case, and the agents then sort of work into it. So if the KPIs are misaligned basically with the goal of the OLAS protocol, then the outcome will be misaligned. If the KPIs are aligned, then at least there's no incentives for agents to do something different from the KPIs. So it's a sort of optimistic design in that sense. On the stack level, we have quite a interesting design where it's, as I said, this hybrid rules-based learning-based system. So we have some use cases, for instance, in governance. One is called Governator, where the agent basically votes in DAO proposals. And there we actually use like certain like stack level features to improve like the reliability of the overall system. So to give a concrete example, when you're voting, when your governance agent is voting Governator, it uses a large language model to read proposals. And so as you probably know, when you're using these models, there's a risk of hallucination or other types of errors arising out of like basically the model interaction. So the Governator doesn't just use one model, it sort of pulls a number of models and the agent architecture then sort of aggregates them and has this kind of voting consensus mechanism because it's a distributed system. It's quite complex, like how this actually functions and like what I actually mean by this might go a bit past some of the listeners now, but we have a nice site on the website, olas.network/learn, where we talk about this decentralized agent architecture, and that's like a good starting point to learn more about it.
Can you go over, you know, the key use cases or applications that OLAS has enabled so far? And, you know, in what ways has OLAS pushed the boundaries of what's possible with autonomous agents in both AI, in both the AI and blockchain space?
Yeah, I think I'll start with the boundaries. I think like we're the first to like actually like has any significant number of agents deployed as a protocol continuously, right? We have over 1.3 million transactions from autonomous AI agents across 8 blockchains. There's like several hundred daily active agents live. There have been hundreds, like now over, I think, close to 1,000 agents ever deployed on the protocol. And we have like a strong ecosystem of builders counting in the tens. So I think in that sense, like we're definitely like a first. We also have been doing this for quite some time. So maybe we're one of the first with AI transaction between agents, a bit hard to pin down when that happened. And then I think we, interestingly, like everyone does their innovations on the agent level. I think what we're seeing is that there's a lot of frameworks out there who do very like get a lot of adoption. Like I'm thinking LangChain, AutoGen, some like kind of other Web2 frameworks, and they're very like inspired by the large language models, which is like a strength and simultaneously a weakness as well. because large language models aren't the only kind of models in town, so to speak. There's other kind of AI architectures. We started this before these dominant models arrived, when there was already a long history of multi-agent systems. So we're very tuned into sort of multi-agent system literature and architectures, and they have inspired a lot of our stack. And now we're actually seeing that a lot of the updates other frameworks are doing are sort of kind of going towards what we already have in the stack, specifically around like seeing your agents as effectively graphs, like where the set of rules are defined as graphs. And then within those nodes of the graphs, you have the sort of more open-ended reasoning from the AI models. So I think there's these interesting research or slash software contributions we've done as well. And then coming to the use cases again, Predict is by far our largest. Out of those 1.3 million transactions, I think over 95% are from that use case. And now fast growing is that DeFi use case, Optimus, and the use cases around social and governance are less fast growing. I think governance, everyone is very excited about agents participating in governance. I think it's a bit like what I mentioned earlier. DAOs are good at describing their problems, maybe not so good at like adopting their solutions. With the social side of things, I think there's a lot of agents which are clearly used as sort of bots or in sort of social channels, but we haven't like fully cracked yet how they can really be leveraged healthily in like in these multi-agent systems so that we can actually like leverage them into our larger data flywheels. So I would say they're a bit under leveraged in our ecosystem, but stay tuned. We have something planned for DEF CON. So
can you explain how the detect, orient, deliver process is applied to Valerie's AI agents? And how do you ensure these agents can handle entire outcomes rather than just tasks?
Yeah. Generally, I guess anything which is like holistically an agent, like an autonomous agent, has to have this sort of detect, orient, deliver cycle, or like kind of, you know, you observe, you think, you act. And in our case, we have implemented these agents as like effectively finite state machines, which define the graphs, which are defined by the developers still. So there's these kind of rails on which the kind of agent travels, in a sense, which forces it to go through various stages during its life cycle. And so that allows us to enforce a certain structure upon the agent whilst also giving the agent a certain freedom. For instance, when it like poses a prompt to a model and then kind of consumes the response, that might determine how it then travels on those rails. But it won't suddenly sort of, you know, jump off the rails and do something else, so to speak. I forgot the second part of the question. So we have the loop and the...
So how do you ensure that these agents can handle the entire outcome rather than just us?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So it's an interesting question in its own right. I mean, there's always a continuum between like what's a task, what's an entire outcome. I think like the way we are thinking about it is that if you are basically sitting there and chatting with an interface and that interface is more or less in real time responding to you with like an output, and then you're using that to refine your decision making or take the next action with that system, I think that's an interactive solution, right? And that's like a cool application. I mean, I use ChatGPT every day and products like this. But if the application is more of the type where I give it a set of instructions, like some higher level goals, and then it goes away and you know, executes them over multiple days or hours or whatever, then that's how we think more about these sort of outcomes products. Loosely put, like those more autonomous products. So an example is these predict agents or the DeFi agents, right? Like you can build DeFi chat interfaces where you chat like interactively into the interface and you say, oh, give me like an option to deploy my capital in a lending protocol. They give you a bunch of options. You select one, it proposes the transaction or signs it on your behalf and you're done, right? That's one mode. The other one would be to say, hello, agent, in the morning, here's my capital, I don't know, 1K, please take it and do whatever you see fit within those parameters. Maybe I'm happy with this risk or only DeFi blue chips or only lending protocols or anything that goes or only meme coins, right? And then I give it that capital to the agent and then I walk away and do something else. And like maybe a week later, I actually forgot about the agent. A week later, I come back and it's kind of done things in between. I think they're qualitatively and quantitatively very different products. Like if you think about the former product, it basically requires a DeFi user. If I have to come to a chat interface and be very explicit about the sort of things I want to interact with and do all the search and discovery, it means I need to know about these concepts. I need to know what is a lending protocol. I need to know something about DeFi. However, imagine you have an agent which you downloaded or like locally, it's running on your device or on a decentralized substrate. And you literally give it like some high level natural language instruction and then walk away and come back a month later and it will have actioned that. That's a very like different product because I can imagine building applications there where the user doesn't have to know anything about crypto, right? They could just care about having value delivered, like basically having the assets invested or having something fun done with these assets, like generating some video or like generating some memes or ship posting or whatever, right? So these are qualitatively very different products, and that's why we keep like talking about interactive versus more outcomes products. I think in the one, you're there interacting with the product and getting something out of it whilst you're doing that. In the other, you're delegating something maybe for very long periods of time and then getting that value back later. And you can sort of let the agent abstract a lot from you. And if I was to add one last thing here, it's like, I think if crypto wants to be like really a breakout success for every citizen on this planet or mostly everyone, it needs to be way more abstracted. There's two ways to abstract it. One is, you know, centralized, your kind of Robin Hood like version, we're back to square one. The other one is a sort of decentralized substrate where I don't need to click around a bunch of UIs and know all the stuff under the hood. It needs to just be gone. And that's agents for me. It's like agents which I can tell goals and then they'll do them for me.
So work smarter with AI is the cornerstone of Valerie's approach. How do you practically integrate AI into the team's workflow?
Yeah, great question. So it is also one of the nine values or how we work statements. So for instance, on the marketing side, we have basically these custom chat GPTs, these GPTs are what they're called, which every tweet goes through them and gets refined that way. It checks for a bunch of rules like, you know, are you violating some of the regulatory requirements which we set on the team, or are you kind of using the wrong persona, things like that. Very helpful, really accelerates things there. Then in terms of like content creation, like assets, be it images or even like content, often like people use it. And then on the coding side, we have the OLA stack, which we covered at length. We've built a product on top of it, which is a bit like a co-pilot specific to the OLA stack for software developers called Ginny. Pretty unimaginative product name, but that's sort of what it does. You type in like prompts, and then it sort of spits out like agents for you. They are not like ready for production, but they, you know, accelerate the development time by a lot. So those are like very concrete examples of how we use it. And like, yeah, team is free. Like everyone has access to these tools to leverage them.
Cool. Yeah, good to know you. Walk your talk. So now I'm going to do a rapid fire round with you. But you can also give us long answers. That's okay. But before that, I want to ask you, like, I'm really contemplating using an AI agent for DeFi. And, you know, I only got into all this, like, staking, liquid staking, etc. recently. But still, I'm always very conscious. Like, so what would be, like, your advice to somebody who has never used AI agents for DeFi? And that's, like, one question. And then personally, my question is, like, you personally, have you been using AI agents for DeFi, and for how long, and what has been your experience?
Yeah, great question. For the first, I would say probably don't. If you haven't, like, if you're not a power DeFi user, I think the interactive agent products I've seen are a bit scary because they're not always accurate. So you could have a lot of problems there. The sort of more outcomes-based products, which we're building, like with Optimus, I am using them myself, but they're still somewhat limited. So I think, like, you know, check back in when we're like out of beta and then they should be to the quality where a sort of non-DeFi, non-experienced user would actually like draw value from them.
But how far do you think is like generally the industry where AI agents can be used, like even by beginners for DeFi?
I think it's just a matter of months now, yeah.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Okay, so rapid fire, David. What was the last... Okay, or maybe like what is the book that you're listening to, that you're reading right now, or what is the podcast you're listening to at the moment?
None right now.
Or what?
I am mostly like reading technical things right now, unfortunately, nothing of joy. So it's mostly like papers and so on AI stuff, agents and so on.
Did you watch a movie recently?
Yes. Last movie I've seen was... good question. I don't recall. But yeah, I do watch movies, but they're more sort of to turn my mind off. That's why I don't remember.
Yeah, you work very hard. Good. Okay, so... what is your favorite? Which one is your favorite place to work remotely? If you are a remote company, right? Yeah. So, which is your favorite place to work remotely?
I do like working from coffee shops as part of the day, and then like also I need some quiet. I'm very good at like not caring about the specifics of the locale, as long as it's not too hot or not too cold. Which actually, where I'm right now, is a bit of a challenge. It's too hot.
Right, it is humid also, Hyderabad, no? Very humid.
Yeah.
Okay, one skill you wish you could instantly master?
I would like to be stronger on like some of the people skill side. Like, I you know, like I'm working with a lot of tech, working with a lot of people. And I think actually it's always like the people side, which is the harder one, because you want to unite people around your cause, or, you know, explain them concepts like we're doing here, or like kind of just align them with the mission. And like, I think that's where my biggest leveling up is possible. Yeah.
Well, you're talking to three people who are asking you a lot of questions. So we would say your people skills are quite, quite good. But yeah, good to know. I think we also had one founder who said like building hype, or something like that, like once we got that answer as well. So, okay. Then what's that one word you think your team would use to describe you?
I mean, I actually have like evidence there because we had the offsite and we do these like compliment circles. Everyone writes it down. But they wrote loads of words and I can't, like, I think one thing is like I probably work too much. To put it nicely, I think, you know, there's been this meme around founder mode. I think I'm in founder mode in the sense that like I think I'm quite good at going very deep on the things which I think matter a lot for the organization at a given time, and then I let the other things like be delegated to people who know better. Yeah, that's where I think like one of my strengths lie, because I think especially when you're that early, you know, you never have perfect product market fit. You need to sometimes really go down into the weeds and care about the latest, like the last dotted I and cross T, right? But in other areas, it's like the high zoomed out part, which you need to kind of bring to show people like the full picture when they get lost in the details. And I think I can do that relatively good.
Okay, that's a good quality. at least for like investors and employees. So, okay. What's something that you would build with AI if there were like no limits?
So let me define no limits as in I don't have anything else to do and I can actually code, because that I can't do right now. So then I think like I'm always surprised how loads of people talk about autonomous AI agents and how few people actually build them. I've been actually coding until maybe like a year ago when it just became infeasible from a startup point of view. But I would want to go back and really try to see like how can we leverage like everything we've learned about like and from large language models and what we know from reinforcement learning and really push like what it means to have an autonomous AI agent architecture. Because I still feel that we're not quite there yet in terms of no one's quite there yet in terms of like the overall like architectures which we need in order to build truly like generalist agents.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. This is like just spontaneous. Personally, do you use AI agents? How many?
So everyone at Valerie actually runs their own autonomous AI agents. So we have this app called Pearl, which OLAS users can, anyone can download going OLAS.network/operate. And I use that every day. It's my agent participating in prediction markets and in DeFi. And then I use the sort of more like, you know, ChatGPT like AI workflows as well.
Okay, sounds good. And then the last question is that, yeah, this is always tough because we don't know the age of our founders on this podcast. But what's your advice to, what do we say, like 7 years younger David?
I think always just do it. I mean, there's like increasingly, I think like you hear these things. I haven't actually met these people, but apparently there's a lot of people who work at sort of AI startups and labs and sort of stop working because they see the impeding arrival of super intelligence and think it's all not like there's no point. And then I can imagine like, and I've seen it on the other end of the spectrum, like it's just overwhelming. Maybe you're like in not the best circumstances and you think you can't achieve certain like outcomes. Or I think it's just like step one is always do it, right? Like you need to get started. And I think it applies at every stage of the career. Like stopping and just sitting around, it's like not something I would ever do.
Keep going, basically.
Keep going and like, you know, go for the challenge. I mean, I think it's a bit of a trope, but it's true. I mean, often like the doers, you know, like once you actually do it, the thing you've been talking about, like you're already so far ahead in terms of like the bell curve, right? Like all the others are still talking about it. You're actually doing it. And then yes, probably there's loads of people who are better at it than you, but that doesn't really matter. You just need to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like tough things sort of give you more confidence, you know, in the process. Like that's true. Okay. That's a great note to end this podcast. We had a lot of fun with you, David. And thanks for taking out the time. And also Kenzie and Sashi for co-hosting. And we will release this soon. Thanks for everyone who's listening. And we'll be back with another founder story on Beacon Podcast. Mm-hmm.